Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanksgiving is next week and a time many reflect on the things in their life that they are thankful for. But what if we did that daily? Researchers have found that making a daily habit of expressing gratitude can make you healthier and happier. Today, we discuss the psychology of gratitude with psychiatrists Jonathan Schwartz and Mark Whaley and social worker Anne Gagan. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
So, interesting that the study of gratitude within psychology is really like pretty new, or like around 2000?
Yeah, just the past 19, 20 years, whatever, with the advent of the positive psychology movement. That was a reaction to the focus of psychology and psychiatry. It had always been on pathology, on weakness, on deficit. The positive psychology movement grew out, I guess, of from the grassroots, whatever. It wasn't necessarily professionally led, but it shift the attention to what positive attitudes, emotions, thoughts, actions, behaviors can accomplish, what allows for that, as opposed to the loss and the deficit model. So it certainly has grown, and you can't turn on TV or flip through all the Xfinity channels without being invited to some new program that's going to turn your life around.
Yeah.
It's based on principles of positive psychology.
So in this kind of 20 years, looking at this, we've done quite a bit. Research tells us there are some negative impacts, but we'll talk about the positive first. So what does the research tell us about if we're able to do this, if we're able to express our gratitude and thanks for things?
I was thinking about this. The image that comes to my mind about this after looking at the research is the image of Popeye popping up a can of spinach, and he's transformed. in other words, it has so many multiple effects in so many different domains of behavior, of bodily function, of attitude, feeling, it's like, spinach. It's, it's really good for you.
The interesting thing is it's rather obvious. And I think sometimes the things that are so obvious to us, we don't value. So the idea that gratitude, which has its source, the word is grace, comes from grace, has been part of the major religions and philosophies for, centuries, that it's at the core of so many the good things in life. Mm-hmm. But I think the key, and as we talk further, the key is noticing. Mm-hmm. And we can say, well, I'm grateful. But if we don't notice mm-hmm. and be specific about those things which are ours alone in a way, and express it, then it the idea of gratitude doesn't really have any impact. Mm-hmm. And it can, I think, the philosophy of gratitude, practice of gratitude, can really change your thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, that was kind of what it's about, right? Changing your thinking, and maybe you can talk a little bit about some of the research with the journal. journals where, and you think about that. I think this is true even of not just expressing, just keeping journals in general. You forget, like Anne saying, you don't really sometimes recognize what's happened
sure.
in your day, and you go back or you look last year when I was having a tough time, and you read this and you're like, wow, I don't remember that part of it, or I don't remember this really being so happy about this particular thing. So kind of it helps us reflect on what's happening in our lives.
It really is an exercise in attention. And focusing your attention away from what might be a negative. Well, I think all humans have a negative bias. That's really what gets our attention. And that comes from billions of years of evolution, really, because that's how we survived. It's automatic. It's mm-hmm. built into our unconscious response and behaviors. That goes back to... the unicellular organisms actually had to have mechanisms of approach and avoidance, attention is an outgrowth of that. Mm-hmm. So these journals that you're talking about are contrived, but specific ways of focusing one's attention on positive things that are existing in an individual's life, as opposed to focusing it on the negative, which is like a magnet. It kind of grows, you know, it attracts us, attracts our attention. So the concept is writing down what things you have to be grateful for. And you can do it in many ways. You can do it on a daily basis. You can do it. You can even do it in your mind when you don't want to write. You just think about what you have grateful, what you have to be grateful for at that moment. And you'll notice that your body state, feeling state, mental state shifts. If you kind of keep your mind there and kind of let the negative go, let the negative that kind of always is intruding. Let it be.
It's almost like a meditation in a way.
It's like a meditation.
I think one of the things that you see from the whole bunch of research that's done on gratitude is a phenomenon that all of us, and I say this about myself as a mental health professional, but I think all of us as people, you know, we really forget the power of the human mind to actually change our reality. We see this in so many different ways, in so many different contexts. For example, there's a ton of research that has shown, you know, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that if you are optimistic about an outcome, you are actually more likely to achieve that outcome. I mean, that's not even arguable. The concept of faking it until you make it is based on science. That is in fact the case. So even if you don't feel grateful, if you compel yourself to sit down, and this is the research shows this in a lot of different ways, but specifically with regard to keeping a diary, if you sit down every day and write down three things that you're grateful for, you in fact will be healthier, you will be happier, you will sleep better, you will be in so many ways. Probably it helps reduce the wrinkles in your face. So if you need no other motive,
less stress,
you know, you can look more youthful. But it's hard to remember how powerful that is. You know, we in doing this TMS that we're doing, the you know, treatment for depression, we tell people all the time, you know, if you strive to be optimistic about the outcome, you actually are increasing the chances that you will have a positive outcome. And I know that that's true. I have a patient who, after she finished the course of TMS and didn't respond to it, she told me she blamed herself for not improving because she had only done it to humor me. She never believed for a minute that it would work. And she's now convinced that it didn't work because of her attitude about it. So gratitude is the same thing. You know, the more grateful you are, I mean, it's such a, in a way, you can think of it again as a sort of almost selfish phenomenon. It's ironic, isn't it? We're talking about being grateful for what we have, grateful for what other people have done, but you do nothing but improve your own state of affairs by being grateful.
Well, that's on that 2003 study published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. This was, they had the group, one group write down their weekly gratitudes, and one group wrote their weekly burdens, and the third group wrote a weekly sort of neutral journal, and after 9 weeks, the group that practiced the gratitude exercised 40 minutes more each week, had an increased optimism by 5% or more, and felt that their life was better overall. And I think that speaks to your point of the power that we actually have in our mind that we don't realize. And as you were saying, I've told the story before, but I was thinking of that difference. I was on a ski team once, and you know, we skied at night and it's icy, and you know, you're up there and you're thinking, oh boy, I'm gonna fall. I just know. And when you think that, you do. And we had this guy on our ski team. He was our weather guy, and he skied at Penn State, and he's like, he'd be up there like the coach, get that ice before, you know, he'd like give us this pep talk. Not only did we not fall, we were faster than we'd ever skied. And we were like, because, you know, just like you believe you can do it, right? And when you believe you can do it, a lot of times you do.
Well, that's what they teach in sports psychology. You know, if you're hitting a golf ball, it's envision the flight of the ball. That's the mindset that you want to kind of get yourself in. And more times than not, it'll fly the way you envision it.
Or envisioning you get people public speaking, envision you getting up and nailing that speech.
Right.
And maybe it's just that it increases your confidence, right? That is part of what makes that you so successful. And
I think
the distinction too with gratitude is that when one evokes it, and the act of seeking something to be grateful for is is really where the power is. Mm-hmm. Because if you're in a mindset where everything's terrible, nobody cares about me, and the whole litany, and you stop and say, well, what is it that I am grateful for? Or to whom am I grateful? There are people out there that have done kindnesses to me. There are people out there are things that have happened to me that are good. It immediately, if you evoke it and get very specific, and I think that's specificity. Can't say it. Is really important. Mm-hmm. Who is the person that came forth when you were in fourth grade and gave you a hug mm-hmm. on when you came home? You know, the neighbor who did that. You're evoking a positive memory, a positive feeling, which of course again shifts your brain chemistry. And the nightly practice again, it can be. Very little. It can be, boy, that cup of coffee I had this morning was so good. It just got me going. Mm-hmm. But it's very specific, and that in itself brings forth the positive changes in the brain, the serotonin and the...
You mentioned kindness, and I want to jump in here for a second, because there's sort of this movement that's going on. You said the cup of coffee, where you go up and somebody says, the guy in front of you just bought your cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. And think about what that does for your day. You know, just that being kind. And that didn't Mr. Rogers tell you that?
Yeah,
be
exactly.
kind.
That's right.
Be kind. Ellen DeGeneres, be kind to one another. That's like a big thing. And I saw Dwayne Johnson gave a talk, and it was some kids award thing. And he said he was 14 or 15, and somebody gave him this advice. They said, it's nice to be important, but it's important to be nice.
Yeah.
And what a good message that is in this day and age, to be kind and nice to strangers. Why not, right? I mean, and that could be the thing you end up being thankful for at the end of your day.
And you also end up feeling better about your fellow man.
Yeah. Sure.
And I think, again, we're inundated through all the different media outlets with one horrible story after another. Yeah. One, you know, everything is falling apart.
Yeah.
And to stop and say, well, what is my reality today in this moment? I had three good things that were really beautiful and meaningful, and I'm very grateful that they happen. It moves you away from being a victim of all of this.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah.
Say something. I introduce a little bit of neuroscience here, because I read a very interesting a blurb of a research project. You know, in psychiatric field, a lot of diagnoses, just about all of them, overlap. And it's very hard to tease out what is major depression, what is panic disorder, what is PTSD, what is OCD, because they all overlap. I think we waste a lot of time trying to figure it all out. But at any rate, that's a fact of life. That's just the way it is. And we don't have the tools yet to really definitively separate disorders based on something that's objective and measurable. And we may never have. But this study points to something that is basic to what we're talking about. What these researchers did is they took what's called functional MRIs, which means how the brain is acting in a given situation. And they compared the functional MRIs of people with the various disorders that we diagnose, major depression, bipolar disorder, PTSD, OCD, et cetera. And then they did a statistical analysis of what areas across all of this. This was a big study. They had to have big numbers. What areas did these different conditions have in common that were deviations from normal based on the activity of the brain? What the result was, they found three areas that were in common with all of the disorders. These are areas that really have to do with processing unconscious kind of information. But these three areas had in common, they all have to do with shifting attention, shifting frame, shifting tasks, whether it's motor system or whatever. People with all these disorders have in common a hypofunction or a low functioning of one, two, three of these areas. That make them different from, quote, the normal brain. So it just is. I read it as neuroscientific evidence of the importance of shifting frame. Mm-hmm. And I think all our treatments really do that, that the medications that we administer, we talk about serotonin improvement, et cetera. The ultimate result of that is somehow to perturb the brain. It forces a shift. The TMS that you're involved in, it's a biological intervention, just like an ECT too. It forces a shift in frame. It forces a shift in the ruts that the nervous system is in by introducing some stimulus that can't be avoided. And it's that shift that I can see, or I can conceive of, as being the therapeutic ingredient that results in some shift of attention. And that's what we're talking
exactly.
about here, too.
Mark, I think you're cheating because you didn't actually give us, the rest of us, all of these references. It's not really fair.
Yeah. That's right.
But, you know, it was a reference that you gave that I think kind of speaks to this, and I don't remember which psychologist says, the brain's primary reward chemical is dopamine. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing, however, is that we can't feel rewards and threats unless we focus attention on them,
yes. exactly.
which is what you're basically saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I had a support group for grieving widows and widowers, and I posed a question to the question. I said, I'm going to ask you all to think about these three things. Number one, what are you grateful for about the loved one who was in your life? Mm. And the second was, what are you grateful for in the caregiving experience that you had? Mm. And the third was, what are you grateful for in yourself as a consequence of this change in your life? And the energy shifted, because normally in a support group, one reports on the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And needless to say, in a support group that's on a grief support group, it's on the struggle of grief, which mm-hmm. is profound.
Right.
I'm not certainly not discounting that. But to ask those questions, it was amazing to see the participants almost physically perk up because each had to access and answer those questions. And when people started doing that and became more comfortable, it became the most a really lovely exchange.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
And they felt positive
exactly.
At the end, sure.
Yeah. And they shared.
Well, and they shared, yeah.
And it's interesting, too, that there's a situation where, of course, these people had a very real experience, and you weren't asking them to fantasize or to make anything up. You're asking them only to reflect on their actual experience, whether it be with the person that they lost or, you know, on their own internal experience. But I'm reminded of something that was referenced in the material that we read for today's show, that when people go to a horror movie, they experience that fear, that scare, that scariness, mm-hmm. even though at the same time they know this is not real.
Right.
And what that kind of pointed out to me and reminded me of is that you can constructively provoke yourself or others to feel things, to think about things, even though in the moment that didn't happen spontaneously to them.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So what you were asking people to think about was real. But it didn't come spontaneously or naturally to them. It came because you provoked that with your questions and your suggestions.
And they
suggestions.
Had to work on evoking it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Provoke and evoke.
There's that shift, right, that you're talking about.
See, I don't go to horror movies because I can't get myself to believe that this isn't real.
Yeah.
So I just can't remind myself of that often enough.
Goes hand in hand with it. Another point that I think that came across here was that the brain doesn't really know what it's reacting to. It doesn't matter. It can react to thoughts that you generate. It can react to where you put your attention in the environment. It can react to real things in the environment or fantasy things in the environment. The brain is pretty egalitarian. You know, it just reacts because it's always monitoring survival and monitoring your internal chemistry, et cetera. So many things. But this Thanksgiving and this attitude of gratitude that humans have. I imagine we're the only species that have it, at least to the kind of sophistication that we do. Really is a tool that we frequently, daily, overlook.
You're listening to The Point, and we are discussing the psychology of gratitude with psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, psychiatrist Mark Whaley, and social worker Ann Gagan. 866-999-4626 if you'd like to share your thoughts with us on gratitude. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So gratitude is not the same as indebtedness.
No, they both follow. What they have in common is that they both follow the reception of assistance or help. But they are different, because with indebtedness, the expectation is that you're going to repay the debt. And with gratitude, there's no expectation there. With just a random act of kindness, you're not expected to pay up for that right then. And actually, indebtedness can cause you to avoid the person that helped you, because every time you
feel a little guilty.
Yeah, you feel guilty that you don't have the resources to compensate them. But gratitude is free of that.
Mm-hmm. So you sort of touched on this, Anne, the link between spirituality and gratitude. Who wants to talk about that?
Well, I'll just mention that in all the major religions, a fundamental part of the religious experience or the spiritual experience is praise and gratitude to the higher power, to in Christianity, to God and Jesus, and in Catholicism, all the saints and angels. I was just in Italy, and wow, they were very grateful, and they put all that gratitude into beautiful, beautiful art, which is an interesting expression. And you think of all the hymns in the Christianity that, you know, how great there are. It's an act of praise, an act of thanks, an act of gratitude in many of the services. The same thing in the Islamic faith. The praising of Allah is a daily, I think it's five times a day, time taken to thank Allah for all the gifts. And in the Jewish faith, it is fundamental to the, well,
everything comes from God.
Everything comes from God. Right. And so the act of praising that. Now, in spiritual, and in the Buddhist faith, one pays attention, and there may not be the same expression towards a deity, but there is the idea that in the peace of the moment is everything is complete, and one is trying to achieve that. So we have that in ourselves, too. We have that, and that's part of our human nature, too, and we call it our higher power. To be able to access something far beyond ourselves and to be grateful. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the faiths, if you look at congregations when they're singing, that lifts them. Mm-hmm. Beyond and above themselves to something greater. Mm-hmm. And 12-step programs are all about that, too. So it's really powerful, and I think so accessible.
Yeah, sure. You mentioned that gratitude comes from the word grace. I was wondering how you define grace. What does grace mean?
I think that, again, in the Christian tradition, grace is the unbidden descent of love for the individual from God, and that in the tradition, one makes an effort, and then grace descends. Mm. So that really does play a part in what we're talking about when you're walking down the street and someone opens the door for you, which is very simple. But if you go to the post office, that's happening more often these days. I've noticed. It's very nice.
Yeah.
And it just catches you off guard, and you didn't earn it. You didn't set it up. It just happens.
Yeah, and you're valued.
You're valued.
You get a sense of value right there.
Exactly.
So I'm wondering if, do we think that there are, you know, some personalities that are just naturally more thankful and some, you know, and I guess it comes back to the positive negative thinking, right? Some people just are kind of caught in that negative thinking and some people are a little more positive.
I think there's a dispositional ingredient there. In other words, you're sort of you take in information, and some people I think are more negatively biased. They use it as a protection, as if they worry about something, and then they're going to be prepared, so to speak, for when the bad does happen. Mm-hmm. That's a common thing we see in the mental health field. But I think, yes, I think there has to be a bias of thinking. It certainly has its roots in experience, mm-hmm. In adverse experience primarily.
Yeah.
You know, we talked in another show about the consequences of adverse childhood experiences. So, that's tuning you up for a negative bias and processing everything that happens in the future in a negative way. And if you can't balance that out somewhat, you're going to be depressed.
Mm-hmm. There's no question that temperament plays mm-hmm. into
yeah.
this.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a pretty huge prospective study done by a woman named Stella Chess back in the 60s, I believe she published. And she followed hundreds of newborns right from the nursery in the hospital into their teenage years and into early adulthood, and looked at different ingredients of temperament. And some of those are reflected in the five qualities that we, you know, read about in the materials for today. Mm-hmm. But clearly there are people who are more open, more gracious mm-hmm. By their nature. But I think also parenting has a great deal to add or subtract from how we're born too. And I was, you know, we were chatting earlier about my thoughts about entitlement and how I believe we live in an era of entitlement as opposed to enlightenment,
right,
which was actually a really more positive era a long time ago. So when you feel that you are due good things, when you feel that you're entitled to have people look after you, to give to you, et cetera, I don't think gratitude comes quite so easily,
right?
Because you feel like, you know, why should I be? I mean,
It's
really the opposite.
Yeah.
It's almost an antidote to gratitude, entitlement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think if those of you who are listening find that, you know, gratitude doesn't come easily to you, you might want to think about how entitled you may or may not feel, because mm-hmm. that might be obstructing the way of gratitude.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of one of the things
I
was thinking too. Is like, you know, you want to teach your children or grandchildren, you know how to be grateful and appreciate what they have, and I'm wondering how, you know, I guess some people probably are more aware than others, and people maybe more. You can point it out to some people where other people might not get it. And I'm just thinking, you know, you don't realize, you know, how lucky you are until, like, you know, you lose something, right? Then you the loss is there. But just thinking, years ago, I worked on a telethon for arthritis, and the poster girl was 10 years old, and she was very arthritic, and she was just this delightful little girl. And we were at a ski area doing a fundraiser there, and we're riding up on the ski lift, and she's just, look at how beautiful this is. And don't you wish everyone could experience this? And she was just so grateful in that moment to be having this experience. And I was like, wow, she's 10 years old and she's got this, you know, amazing attitude with all of the struggles that she has in her day-to-day life. And, you know, it's like made me appreciate that ride more, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think some people may be more open to that you can point, you know, well, we're so lucky because of.
Mm-hmm.
And other people might not hear that message, right?
Don't hear it. Yeah, no. I think your point about entitlement as a barrier toward gratitude is very well put and very well taken, because it does shut off. Sometimes people use the phrase the 30,000 foot view of things, if you're entitled, then your attention is just within a capsule, within a bubble, you lose out on so much in life, and you know, you can, if you keep keep it up and develop it just along those lines, you can really deprive yourself of satisfying interactions in life and destroy what you build. I always talk about Donald Trump, but he always comes to mind in terms of that, because he is so highly entitled and has been all his life, apparently. And he doesn't have the capacity to build with others. He could use a dose of gratitude, I think, or at least an exercise in it.
Yes.
Might shift his mental state a little bit. It would be useful.
Yeah.
And don't forget, next Thursday we have Thanksgiving, and mm-hmm. You know, if you want to take a suggestion from me, I would say go around the table and everybody talk about three things that they're grateful for.
You know, one of the things we do at the dinner table is we don't say grateful. Probably we should. It's more, what was the best part of your day? You know, okay. So it's kind of like you're reflecting back on, well, I really enjoyed, you know.
On a daily basis.
On a daily basis, yeah. Mm-hmm. We try to.
Well, that's a great exercise, mm-hmm. because it stops everything and focuses on, you have to search for it,
perhaps. A positive instead of a negative. And, not the worst part of your day, it was the best part of your
day. And the beautiful thing is you're expressing it.
Yeah.
And the other piece of gratitude, I mean, generally we can sit back and think about this, but it's really, really nice to have people come up to you and say thank you,
right.
Or for you to notice something and express it. The old-fashioned thank you cards are mm-hmm. not in vogue, but darn if you get one and somebody sits down and takes the time to say that encounter or that experience meant so much to me.
So true.
It really goes to your heart.
Yeah. No,
it really does.
Right.
Well, in our materials, it says a simple thank you can go a long way. Research at Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania finds managers who say thank you to the people who work for them may find that those employees feel motivated to work harder because they're feeling appreciated. Rather, right. I mean, how often do you hear, I do so much and they don't appreciate anything I do? And that's not true just of work. I mean, teenagers say that a lot, don't they? They do everything.
You know? Just think of the restaurant you go into, and the research shows that the waitresses that write down thank you on mm-hmm. the check receive a bigger check, receive a bigger tip. Because thanking somebody actually motivates what we'd call pro-social behavior. In other words, just positive response, mm-hmm. just being thanked for being there.
Marsh sends us an email saying, very thankful for you all discussing this, and I'm so appreciative of WCAI and your great local programming. It does take that shift, but making it a habit makes such a difference. Just FYI, grazie in Italian, in Latin, gracias. I've learned that wherever I travel, the most important word to learn in the target foreign language is thank you.
That's perfect.
That's a good put.
Lovely
put.
Email. Thanks for that.
Yes.
You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about the psychology of gratitude with psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, psychiatrist Mark Whaley, and social worker Ann Gagan. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Sarah is giving us a call from Edgartown. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. I just wanted to add to your show that I'm lucky enough to be the family and consumer science teacher at the Edgartown School. And we have this tradition that before the students eat what they've made, we go around and listen to each other, say what they're happy about or thankful for.
Oh,
and
that's
it's just delightful.
Yeah. And what age kids did you say that was?
I teach fifth grade through eighth grade.
Right.
And, you know, we all have to listen to each other. And just I like to do it to remind them that they have to, you know, really think of the good things in their life, not just the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Can you observe any difference in the room atmosphere when you go through this exercise?
You know, they really look forward to it. And now they know that that's the routine. And they definitely, you know, sit down and say, okay, now we have to, they're funny. Sometimes they say, now we have to pray. And I said, no, we're not praying. I'll lose my job if we pray.
Well,
we're saying what we're happy about or thankful for. But, you know, some kids that where English is not their native language, they will say that they're happy that they left Brazil. Some kids are very funny. One girl said once, "I'm very happy for the custody laws and the legal system in this country." Wow. You know, she likes to get a laugh, but also she's had a struggle in her life.
Yeah.
But it's just lovely. It's really a lovely part of my day. Yeah. My day.
Yeah. So that's what you're thankful for. So Sarah, thanks for sharing that with us. 866
My pleasure.
866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So are there any negative impacts of being grateful or expressing gratitude?
I did come across some research that I think is pretty small, really. One study found that middle-aged divorced women who kept gratitude journals were no more satisfied with their lives than those who did not.
Huh.
So in that situation, gratitude doesn't overcome the pain of divorce, certainly. It could ease it in momentarily, I think, mm-hmm. if you push it. But that's what the research said. This was another one. Said that children and adolescents who wrote and delivered a thank you letter to someone who made a difference in their lives and they made the other person happy, but it didn't improve their own well-being later on. And the bottom line message there is maybe the gratitude is an attainment of maturity somewhat.
Exactly. So there is
something to be said about that.
Yeah. All right, Leslie is giving us a call from Oak Bluffs. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to share with you that every morning I have a book that I write in something of gratitude from the day before.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And I either it could be something that I've seen driving, or I make a point of going by the beach, or an interaction with a student or a colleague, or, some kind of thing that's personal to me. And it's made me actually think about things while I'm driving or working or walking, of being really grateful for something. Is this going to be my gratitude for tomorrow? So it's kind of permeated my whole day.
I love that. That's bringing that awareness. Do you go back and read them, Leslie? Do you go back and look at?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. And some are a chuckle and some I'll be like, what?
How long have you been doing this?
Just about a year.
Uh-huh.
My daughter gave me a journal last year for Christmas, and I thought, what am I going to write? You know, because I tend to really focus on negative, mm-hmm. unfortunately, and had a really rough year the year before with a suicide in the family and a divorce, and so it's just turned out to be a wonderful thing.
What a great gift from your daughter, you said, gave that to you? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So Leslie, have you been doing it for this year now? Have you noticed the shift in how you think about things? I mean, do you feel like journal has helped?
Well, it has helped. I still have a long way to go. But it really has kind of put things in perspective, or things that I have just kind of taken for granted, mm-hmm. that are a part of my life, it really focused on, my faith, having a strong faith, and my surroundings and my good friends and things that I hate to say not take for granted, but just have assumed that they will always be there for me, but now really grateful that I have those things.
Yeah. I like the method that you've developed of kind of the going forward of it. In other words, mm-hmm. that you make a note during a day of what you're going to write the next morning, and it carries.
It does. It really does.
Yeah. Well, Leslie, thanks for sharing that. That's a great idea.
Oh,
holiday season's coming up. People might want to take that idea. Thank you, Leslie. We have an email from Deb who says, 12 years ago, I told a friend of mine that my daughter was pregnant, and she said, that's what I'm going to write in my gratitude journal today. I asked her about it and started that night. I began my own journal with, I am grateful that my friend told me about keeping a gratitude journal. I've done it every night since. Deb, thanks so much for sharing that. That's great. A lot of people are already doing this. We, and in this material that we have. It says gratitude journals or diaries in which people list weekly or nightly what they are thankful for are becoming regular therapy tools. And this psychologist, if thankfulness were a drug, it would be the world's best-selling product with a health maintenance indication for every major organ system. Speaking again to that power, right?
Yeah.
Jim is giving us a call from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you? Good morning. Hate to break up the happiness about thankfulness, but
all right. Thanks for calling, Jim.
Go ahead, Jim. He's kidding.
Sorry. No. I guess I'm just jaded because my company does work with a lot of fast food places, and when I go there, I'll see the girl behind the counter go, "Oh my God, I hate this guy," and then all of a sudden he comes to the counter and they say, "How are you today? Oh, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day." And I see it happen time and time again to the point where I'm like, I said, you guys are ruining it for me because every time I go someplace now, I'm not sure if they really like me or not. Or if they're saying something about me before I come in the door. So I can't, I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah, well, I think it has to be sincere, right? I mean, for it to well, maybe in the case of a stranger, but saying thank you. But,
probably helps business.
It does. Well, Jim, thanks for sharing your perspective with us. We appreciate that.
Sorry.
No worries. No problem. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to get these two calls from the Vineyard because I often think about how a lot of kids experience it as very tough to grow up on the Vineyard and on Nantucket.
Isolated.
And as people get older, they really appreciate, you know, the incredible virtues, the beauty, the quiet, all of the great things about living on Nantucket and the Vineyard. But we know that it's very tough for kids, particularly adolescents. We know that there have been a number of suicides on the two islands over the last 10, 20 years. Yeah. And I think it was, Mark, that you made a comment about how perhaps gratitude is something that comes more easily with maturity. But the Vineyard and Nantucket are two really, you know, kind of great examples of sort of the upside and the downside of what life is like.
Yeah.
So how do you, if gratitude is more a thing of maturity, how do we help younger people, you know, be aware and maybe understand the power of gratitude?
Modeling.
Yeah, good. Yeah. That's a good point.
I mean,
yeah.
And expressing gratitude to them and letting them know what their gesture, their particular surprising act of kindness or goodness meant as a parent. Mm-hmm. I'm very proud of you when I see how kind you were to the neighbor child. To point it out to them and to say and use the word grateful. Because I think that's really the best teacher.
When I was driving down here, I was listening to Innovation Hub, and Kara was interviewing an author who has done a lot of research that shows that young people, I guess all of us really, learn better from those who are approximately the same age or slightly older than we do from people who are much older. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a child, and this was an example that they gave on the show, a child learning to play tennis is going to learn more by playing against somebody who's a little bit better than they than they would from playing Roger Federer. So the teacher from Edgartown who spoke about doing this in her class, I think that was the person who spoke this.
Yeah.
So the kids are listening to
their peers
talk about this. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the most powerful way to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it makes sense because when you think about it, when you're a kid, don't you're really looking up to the kids that are a little bit older than you. You're like, you want to be them, right?
That's right.
So that makes total sense.
You're learning,
yeah.
Right.
Wayne wrote an email, "When I was recovering from cancer, I learned a lot about gratitude. A friend of mine who was a cancer survivor talked about gratitude being one of the gifts of cancer." Good point, Wayne. Mm. Thanks for sharing that.
Sure. I'd like to read a
you bet. Go
really
ahead.
Beautiful yep. quote. Because I do a lot of work in grief and loss, I found this quote to be so powerful. And it's by Francis Ward Weller. "The work of the mature person is to carry grief in one hand and gratitude in the other, and to be stretched large by them. How much sorrow can I hold? That's how much gratitude I can give. If I carry only grief, I'll bend towards cynicism and despair. If I have only gratitude, I'll become saccharine and won't develop much compassion for other people's suffering. Grief keeps the heart fluid and soft, which helps make compassion possible."
Hmm.
Interesting.
That's beautiful. Yeah,
it is lovely. Yeah.
I think that's the fear, and some of the research says that, well, men tend not to want to express gratitude as much because in some situations it might make them feel weak. But I think that that's where you can get, you know, cynical or despairing mm-hmm. if you express gratitude. And it's also the search for meaning. Mm-hmm. When you look at a situation such as the last gentleman who wrote the email, and he's going through cancer, and you're dealing with survival, but his friend helped him look for meaning in that experience.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is gratitude. Mm-hmm. That is, I'm finding meaning from this unfortunate experience. And I also think that, I love the last line, grief keeps the heart fluid and soft, which helps make compassion possible.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sure, right. Yeah.
You had some great quotes that you shared, Mark, and the one that was my favorite, this is from Oprah, be thankful for what you have, you'll end up having more. If you concentrate on what you don't have, you will never, ever have enough. Isn't that so true?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll feel the deficit.
Yeah. Right. Rick is giving us a call from Brewster. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Mindy. This is Rick Morse calling from Brewster, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Dr. Whaley, I wanted to thank you for coming into our restaurant yesterday.
It's a good restaurant, by the way. And I'm not just plugging it. It's a good restaurant.
What do you want, a free meal?
Next time, it's on me. Yeah. the point I wanted to make to this show was how I try to appreciate my employees every day and thank them every day when they walking out the door and trying to show their appreciation, because when I was an employee working in a restaurant, I felt that it was a pretty thankless job, being more on edge than appreciated. That pat on the back and that affirmation meant a lot to me, and I think it's how we keep a good attitude going for the restaurant, and that translates to the customers too.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that people are greeted with a smile and then make sure that they're thanked when they leave.
Yeah.
So we can see them again.
Yeah. Rick, I bet you don't have as much turnover because you're so thankful. Am I right? Do you have employees who stick around for a while?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It does, several years.
When you feel appreciated, it goes a long way.
Yeah.
Rick, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
I also, just what Rick had to say, there's a sense of, for the customer, belonging.
Yes.
That's
you
right.
know, you're welcomed. You're
into
greeted.
This happy family.
There's, you're part of something. And wow, you can really feel that when you walk into a restaurant or any kind of even medical office.
Yeah. It's added nourishment, especially in a restaurant.
Exactly.
And this Jim quote from a philosopher says, I am grateful for my non-toothache. We don't think about it until we're suffering, but it's so wonderful not to have a toothache or other problems. That's what I was saying. Until something, you know, you're missing something or you're in pain, you sometimes don't appreciate what you have going on. All right. So we're encouraging folks to do that gratitude journal. And we'd love to hear how that works out for folks, if that helps change their thoughts and how they go day to day. Psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, Mark Whaley, social worker Ann Gagan, thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.